Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, July the 15th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. I spoke to Dr. Tim, and they actually were having some storms and things going on and lost power, and his computer went down. He tried to call back in on his phone, and it kept telling him that there wasn't another show until Monday. And so anyway, he ended up just calling the first hour short because he couldn't get back in. We hope that some of that rain goes on down towards Heartland because they sure need it. And at this time, I'm going to welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We had an awesome meeting last night on the book study club Jeannie, could you take over for a second? Jeannie?
Sure. Okay. I was just going in letting Aria know her tablet time was over. All right. So we've made a few changes to the website and to the app. So if you haven't updated your app on your phone, download the latest update, please do so. Go to your either Google or your Google Play Store or your Apple Store, either one, and type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you've already got it on there, it'll just tell you there's an update. And if you haven't got it on there, then download it. It's free and it's totally private. The only permissions it asks for is to be able to use the internet. And if you decide to save one of your worksheets, it will ask for permission to save it to your computer or your phone. And so nobody gets your answers except you. And if you don't want to save it, it just goes back out to cyberspace, disappears, and you get another blank worksheet. So put that to work in your life. That's one way of doing it and saving the trees. And you can also, I'm doing some additions on the website because the online worksheet has a couple glitches in it, but you can also do the worksheet on your computer. And so there's lots of information out there. We had a really good book club meeting last night and had 40-some people in it. So it was well attended, and it was going over chapters 4, 5, and 6. So you can join us again. Oh, well, that archive, as soon as she sends it to me, I'll put the archive out on the website. So you can go back out and listen to any of the book clubs that Michael has participated in. She does the book club, I think, on 2 or 3 days a week. They do worksheets together and things like that. They're going through the book, but she's waiting until Michael is on the club before she actually goes over the next chapters. So they're doing the work, and it's awesome. That's the second and the fourth Thursday of every month that Michael participates in it. So that'll be coming up in a couple weeks. This coming Saturday, the 16th, is our Still Point Breathing. Now, normally that is the second Saturday of every month, but Michael was out of town last week, so we put it off for 1 week. So that will take place tomorrow at 11 o'clock Eastern time. So if you're not registered and you would like to participate in the Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing, that's a monthly thing. And you can register with us. That information's on the website. You can go under either schedule or events, and you can find it both places. And it says Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing online monthly membership. You can drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. Or if you've got our phone numbers, you can call us and get registered and participate in that. It's a small group, but it's been very powerful and very successful, I think. And so join us in that. Yay. Welcome back.
It has been. It's good to be back, and my voice is on a whole different level of function now. If anybody has noticed the last couple of days, there's definitely a whole different level of opening and shift, and I don't think this is going to be my ongoing normal voice, but it sure is feeling different right now. I had jumped off the line because I'd been trying to reach Betty Goldstein's number today, and that was her on the phone, so I didn't know if I'd be able to catch up with her. So thank you for pitching in there, and she's doing well, and her son's
there.
That's
what I was going to ask, is how is she doing?
Yeah, it sounds like she's doing pretty well. She sounds like she's pretty much on the other side of COVID. She said she was out working in her garden today, and her sons are there, and they're just working through things. It looks like they're probably going to do a memorial service sometime in August, so we'll arrange to go and join them for that.
Just be sure and tell her the week that we're going to be gone. Because we are taking our first vacation in a long time.
That's true. And, it has been a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And I'm looking forward to it. So we will still
Me
be doing
too.
A radio show. We can do that from there. But we are going to go put our toes in the sand.
Yay. So we've nixed the idea of doing Los Angeles or California and seeing Donald.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. And this voice feels really weird, like this doesn't belong to me. Where'd this come from?
It sounds like a frog.
it sounds like a big frog from here anyway, at least. I don't know what it is out there, but the little squeak I've had the last couple of days, it's definitely opened my throat on a whole different level, probably some healing shifts that I was in need of, so much an appreciation for it. And as Jeannie was saying, and I don't have, well, let me look. I don't think I've got the link yet from the Global Book Club yesterday. But let me take a quick look and see if it happens to be there. And if so, we can put it right in the notes. Doesn't look like it.
Well, actually, I would have to upload it to Vimeo.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah.
And so okay. I've got a little work to do before I put it out there.
Right. Cool. All right. So we're back into this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. As Jeannie said, Saturday, if you want to join us for Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing, drop her a note, J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. And we've been talking about the idea of the brain cells that we perceive through the constructs of our mind always tell us more about the constructs of our mind than the world we think we're looking at. And the only way we ever actually get truth from the mind is when it's free of biases that would distort or darken the perceptual output of the mind. And, you know, you go back 2,000 years ago, and if you listen carefully to the language, you can see that this is what they were talking about, but it's been couched in all this, in these religious trappings, but it was never meant to be religious trappings. It was, here's how life works. You know, when you hear Paul talking about, we see as though through a glass darkly, you realize that this mind, when there's hostility or fear in it, darkens perception to the point where a great deal of what we experience has nothing to do with what's actually going on in front of us, with the actuality. Our realities are in such distortions. And when we look at life through hostility, fear, and blame, then, and I should correct that, you can't look at life. You can look at your mind's constructs about life, which are really constructs about the mind itself. We can say they're about life, but the truth is, the number one thing they're always telling us about is ourselves. So the output of a mind always tells you more about the content of the mind. And so when hostility and fear are active in the mind, it means that, and of course when they're active in the mind, it's active in the body too, which is the source of many, many diseases. When you realize that there are things that guide us to keep this mind on track, you know, emotions. Emotions are not caused by what happens in your life. They're caused by the thoughts that move in you and what happens in your life. And I'm going to invite you to just do a little exercise with me. I'm going to ask you to just get quiet for a moment, close your eyes, sit back and relax. Notice how you're feeling physically, mentally, emotionally. And then for a moment, just allow yourself to feel fear. And notice where in your physiology you're feeling that fear. Place your hand wherever you're feeling the fear. Take a breath to that area of your structure. Let the fear soften and just let it melt, let it go. And as you breathe in, imagine that you're breathing in active, present love into that place where fear resides. And then for a moment, allow yourself to feel sadness. Once again, notice in your physiology where you're feeling that sadness. Take a breath and imagine drawing love into that space where the sadness is and allow the sadness to just let loose, let it be released. And then for a moment, allow yourself to feel anger. Notice where you're experiencing that emotion. Take a breath, let that tissue soften, let it open and let it go. And then imagine you're holding a newborn child and tapping into the sweet, loving presence of that newborn. And allow that experience of the presence of love to be intensified in you. Allow that to pervade every cell in your structure, and then bring your awareness just back to our conversation here. And just do a little exploration. And we're going to invite you to, you know, step back and become the observer, as we've talked about before. And be committed to honoring truth as you do this. Truth about what's going on in your mind, the realities you hold, truth about the world, the actualities, and this can be an opportunity to learn to tell the difference because many people don't know the difference. Now notice what you had to do in order to feel anger, fear, sadness, and then move to love. Notice what happened. You had a thought, and sadness moved in you. You changed your thought, and the emotion moving in you was fear. You changed the thought, the emotion was anger. You changed the thought, and the emotion was love. Could it be that the whole thing comes down to the simplicity of changing your thoughts? My offering is that's the core of healing. Remember, once again, if you go to the opening words in the book of John in the Aramaic New Testament, it does not say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Whose mind energy becomes your flesh? I would offer only your own. And, you know, we've said this many times before, what's happening inside of you is happening inside of it. That's why you're experiencing it. Pardon me, is happening inside of you, and that's why you're experiencing it. Now, if you're going to change a thought pattern or a thought complex so that your feelings can shift out of places you'd rather not go, you have to take responsibility for it. And one of the things to be aware of is that no one can simultaneously take responsibility for something and blame someone else for it. Can't do it. Can't be in blame and responsibility at the same time. So you've got to willingly yield up this whole belief that there's a religion out there that's pretty much taken over the whole world, and that is what's going on in my mind, in my body, in my life is somebody else's fault. You made me. Now that's, remember, our definition of denial. If you're going to heal, you've got to give that up. You can't hang out with that anymore. You've got to start to really, truly own what's going on inside of you. So when you replace blame with responsibility, and notice that, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the word responsibility, hear blame. Oh, you mean I'm guilty, I'm at fault, I'm to blame for this? It's like, no, there's nothing in the word responsibility about blame. All we're saying is that as a creator, everything that shows up in your life, you are a part of. You are part of setting that the energy up that draws those experiences to you. When you replace blame with responsibility, you shift so much in your mind that your whole reality, your whole mental and clouds of darkness will lift. It is not natural for a human being to have hate or fear or sadness or grief or rage or depression or pain or turmoil. It's not natural. It comes when we don't know how to control our own minds and our own thoughts, and we have no tools with which to remove the energetic patterns that create those dynamics. And, of course, the main tool that we're looking to restore to the earth is that of forgiveness, that of removal. And notice they've even removed removal. Notice in our Western world, forgiveness doesn't have anything to do with removal of that which didn't belong in you. It doesn't have anything to do with the removal of the brainwash of the culture. No, 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 no. Forgiveness is about how it's all their fault and you've let them off the hook because that pain or trauma or turmoil, that brainwash is moving inside of you. Now notice when you went from sadness to fear to anger to love, somebody's thoughts changed for that to happen. Whose thoughts had to change for your mind to change? Oh my God, it was yours. Your sensations in your physiology change when you change your thinking. Now, the people who cling to the blame game, no, I just thought of a situation where somebody made me so angry. You had a thought that causes anger, and if you forgive, if you remove that thought, the anger attached to that thought will disappear, and nobody can make you feel anything that you don't have thoughts for. It's just not possible. So if you can own and recognize that it's your thoughts that create your feelings, then if yesterday, last month, last year, 10 years ago, you had some sort of emotional turmoil or pain, whose thought had to be moving in you in order for you to experience it? It had to be yours. If tomorrow, next week, next month, 10 years from now, you have some form of emotional turmoil, whose thought's going to be moving in you in order for you to feel it? clearly yours. How many expect to have some sort of pain or turmoil in the future, in their lives? Of course, I can't see your hands moving if you put your hand up, but if we were in a live audience, I guarantee that every person would be putting their hand up. So you expect to have some sort of pain or turmoil in the future. Why would you do that to yourself? Oh, well, no, Michael, you don't understand. I wouldn't do that to myself, but it was Bill that did. Excuse me? Notice a few minutes ago you went through anger, fear, sadness. Bill wasn't there. You've got to stop the blame game. Remember, you cannot simultaneously. It's kind of like it reminds me of an Einstein saying, where he said you cannot simultaneously prepare for peace and war. You can't do it. You're either committed to one or you're committed to the other. If you're committed to your suffering and your pain, then you're committed to blame, and it's all everybody else's fault. And you know, you'll kill yourself with that. That's how people die, when they engage in those kinds of energies. That's the stuff death is made of. Now, the core of responsibility may be hidden under a lot of big rocks in your mind. And the blaster for those rocks is forgiveness. Forgiveness is the tool with which you uncover the parts of you that you've chosen to remain totally and completely oblivious to, and instructed your mind that every time those things move in you, it constructs a picture, a perception that puts the cause outside of you. And you've got to give that up. So our emotions are nothing more than a warning signal. That's all they are. We are creative beings, and it seems that the Creator built into us a feedback mechanism for us to know when our creative process is off base. How do you tell it's off base? Your feelings, your emotions, I should say more correctly than feelings, your emotions are telling you the quality of your creative process. It does that 24/7, 365. You know, emotions are kind of like the fire alarm. If the fire alarm goes off, do you call the fire trucks and send them to your neighbor's house? No. But notice how often you want the blame to go to somebody else for what's happening in your own house. Or, you know, pain is an energy that warns us. And most people just run off and say, well, just give me a pill. Why would you do that? Oh, I want to get rid of my pain. If you want to get rid of your pain, you're going to have to deal with the cause of your pain. You can cover it up. You know, believe me, a person who has a headache does not have a body that lacks aspirin or chemotherapy or whatever you can imagine. That's not why pain is there. Pain is there because there's an energy in you that doesn't belong. And taking a pill is just like, you know, the fire alarm goes off and you go over and you say, I have a pair of wires. I'll cut the wires to the bell. There, see? Now everything's okay. Is everything okay? No, nothing is okay. So the warning signal stopped. The fire's still raging on somewhere. That's why if you start on one drug, you're going to be taking two. When you take two, you'll end up on three. When you take three, you'll end up on four. It's a business that wants customers. Now, do some research. And the ancient root of the word pharmacy is sorcery. Now, if you think the sorcerer can fix your mind, you know, your body, have at it. Good luck. But let me just offer that every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. And there's only one who can forgive, remove from you what is in you. There's only one that can set up the conditions for those energetic patterns to be processed out. So feelings are designed, emotions are designed to inform us, and I really don't mean to equate those. Emotions are designed to inform us of the quality of our thoughts. and the thoughts about the events in our lives. You know, an event, you say, I'm angry because this happened. You're not angry because that happened. You're angry because what happened resonated a thought that causes anger in you. If you didn't have an anger thought attached to it, you look at that event and go, And anger is nothing more than an anesthetic. It's an actual internally produced drug that anesthetizes pain. And the more angry somebody is, the deeper the wound is that needs to be healed. So an event happens. The event resonates thoughts. The thoughts create feelings. That's the truth of it. Now, most people play the game of an event happened. I skip the part inside of me where my thoughts create my pain, and I say, I'm in pain. Event caused pain. I just have to get rid of or change the event. And you don't have to change the event. Now, of course, there are events that it's nice to change, but they don't work. That's fine. But there is no event that you need to be in pain about. So that interim step is where forgiveness is applied. If we live in the fantasies of blame, then forgiveness is the opportunity to touch into the hidden parts of your own mind to heal your insane thoughts. And an insane thought is any thought in your mind that is not based on love. Now, we've been trained in insane thoughts for centuries by kings, and most everybody buys it as, oh, well, that's just the way everybody thinks. No, it's not. Well, but that's the way you're supposed to think. No, it's not. Hostility or fear is an anomaly within the human system. It is insane. It is meant to be a warning signal used to deal with what it's warning about and get rid of it. You know, once the fire is quelled, you've been warned about it, turn the alarm off and reset it. Any thought that's out of harmony with love is insane. Now, of course, you look around our culture, there's a lot of insanity going on. Well, but Michael, how else could you think? You could think thoughts of love. Well, but that makes me so enraged. Notice the lie. Remember our definition of denial. When I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm in denial. And when I'm in denial, I dissociate from a part of my mind. I hide it from myself. And what I hide in my physiology. And what is of a disintegrative nature that I hide in my physiology is a cause of physiological disturbance and disease. You can't separate the mind from the body. You know, it's like here I have a quarter. On one side, there's George Washington. The other side, there's a bird. Can I separate the head from the tail of a coin? No. You can't separate cause from effect. And the mind has this amazing ability, which few people have ever even heard of or imagined exists. And that is that your mind turns thoughts into pictures. Your mind converts its thoughts into literally the world that you see. And it is not the world that you see. Pardon me, it is not the world that causes pain. This is a lesson from the Course in Miracles. It is not the world that causes your pain. It is the world you see. And so when I take responsibility and I start to change those unconscious thoughts that turn into perceptions based in pain and trauma and physical interference with my structure, that's where I need to start to learn and apply forgiveness. And it's something it takes time to learn, to integrate the tools into your life and shift the mind into even thinking about using the tools. You know, there are people that I've worked with for years, and they get into a big issue in their lives. And I'll ask them, well, how many worksheets have you done on that? Oh, well, I haven't done any worksheets. Well, you've got a tool for dealing with that. What's going on? Oh, I just didn't think of it. You can't do new math with an old math mind. And you've got to process out the old math mind to be able to think differently, to get out of the world's brainwash and to be able to function differently than that. And you move into a place where you consciously respond to things rather than react. And you break that word down. How did you react? How did you redo the act that you did on a previous occasion? And recognize that the purpose of life is to kick us right square in the limitation. Life abhors us being diseased. And so through resonance, it's a very simple process. There's nothing miraculous or mystical about it. It's just a process of resonance. If you hold disease energy, the universe is heading for your disease. And it's going to resonate that disease. You say, well, why would the universe punish me like that? No, 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 no. You don't understand. The universe is saying, here's where your healing is. Start to do your work. And if you refuse that, then it'll hit a little harder with here's where your healing is. And each time it turns up the volume till we finally go, oh, maybe I need to do some healing. So that's where we want to head with this work. And we're about halfway through the show time, so Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
Don't have any hands up. However, I have received a couple of texts about two different things. One is they want to know the difference in emotions and feelings.
Okay. So the word I would use for feeling would be more the sensation. So if I have a sensation in my body, whereas emotion, I have an emotion going on. Oh, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm afraid, whatever. So emotion is a reflection of thought energy and has this quality that we call emotion. Sensation, feeling, is I feel energy moving in my big toe. You know, I move my toes and I can feel my toes. There's a sensation there, but that sensation is not an emotion. So that would be the difference. And actually, you know, back 25 years ago when I wrote my book, actually it's more than 25, it's 22, almost 30. Wow, it's almost 30 years ago now. I actually didn't really get that distinction between feelings and emotions. So that would be my offering. See if that works for our questioner.
Okay. And the second one is, can you explain driven life, controlled life, or inspired life?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, there was a very popular book back a few years ago called The Purpose-Driven Life. It's like, excuse me, am I a cow that I need to be driven? And what happens is that kings, parents, you know, I'll share with you, back a few months ago, I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning doing some writing, and I had the guidance to put my phone down, stop writing, and listen. And Aria, our granddaughter, was very much on my mind. And it was like I got a new installment on understanding what my purpose was as a grandfather. And that my goals for her were not her goals for her. And the guidance was, you know, beyond, you know, way back I've shared with you, you know, when Aria was younger, that I was shown very clearly that my purpose or my function as her grandfather was to function as a space of love and only see her. Whatever her body or her mouth were doing, only see her and identify her as love. And, of course, to do that, I had to do the same for me and to be the space, to hold the space where whatever was going on in her physiology, whatever expression was going on, that I was to see behind that and see who she was and join with that and strengthen that to pull that into expression through her physiology. That was kind of like installment one. But the next installment that relates to your question was that, and I was shown that most parents have almost like a container they want to pour their child into. Oh, here's what my child should be. They should be brilliant. They should be this. They should be that. They should do this. They should do that. And, you know, a lot of that is the frustrated goals of the parent. And so a lot of parents have this container that they hold for their child that they want to force their child into as though their child has to look like that in order to be approved of. That would be a controlled life. When a parent says to a child, here's what you are going to do and here's how it's going to unfold. And I was shown that I don't have any business as her grandfather building a container for her to express through. I'm to be the container of love that simply sees who she is and supports her in coming into the world and building her own container, being tied to, being connected to her own being where we receive inspiration. And so out of inspiration, Arya will grow her own container, so to speak, her own space in the world for her unique expression. Rather than be interfered with a container that I might want to build for her, the goals I might have for her and what I think might be right for her. So one of the things we do in building that container, or in refusing to build the container but holding the space for her, is whatever she expresses an interest in, we take her there. We have an environment for her, you know. She likes dinosaurs, and geez, there's a dinosaur museum not far away. We go to the dinosaur museum. She expresses an interest in planets. We create an environment where she can study, and, I mean, she's got her room. We just finished hanging up. She's got her room, just all of the planets pictured, and she knows each one of them. She knows the colors. She knows things about the size of them, where they are in space, what their place. I mean, you know, that's something that she's interested in. Now, I can go back, and I don't remember having any interest in planets. I never learned anything about planets. I'm sure in school at some point we talked about it, but it was a nothing burger for me. But for her, it's something that's really important. So that would be, for me as her grandfather, and my job would be supporting her inspiration rather than trying to direct her life. So people who are driven, an adult, a parent, a king, brainwashes them so that internally, whether they want to or not, they are forced to do certain behaviors and forced to take certain actions. That would be a driven life, driven from within, but sourced from without. The controlled life would be the life where the parent says, here's what you're going to do. I remember someone who was at an intensive way back, probably 30 years ago, and they had a friend who they'd gone to school with, and this person loved to drive and wanted to drive a truck, but his parents were really committed to him being a doctor and forced him. Controlled life. He went to school. He got his doctorate in medicine. And he literally walked the stage and received his doctorate, went down to his parents and handed it to them and said, here's what you wanted. And he went and got a job driving truck. Because that's what he wanted to do. That was his thrill. That would be his inspiration. And so for me, that would be the difference between a driven, a controlled, and an inspired life. Does that fit? Make sense? I hope. For whoever's asking the question. Yeah, cool.
So whoever, there's a lot of you on the switchboard, press one. That's bound to raise the question.
I would think it might. So if you're out there in listener land, let's talk about it. Does that make sense? Does that fit? Does this whole idea of, you know, what's going on in the world around us and the difference between what's going on around us and what's going on within us. And one of the objectives of this work is so that people can tell the difference between the two. because most people think because their mind generates a picture and they think they're seeing the picture through their eyes outside of them, picture's actually out there. You have never seen anything with your eyes. It's not possible to see with your eyes. The eyes are a one-way valve. Light energy comes in, carries information into the brain, and that light energy resonates content to the brain, and the brain generates literally the picture world that you see. It's not out there. There is a world out there. I'm not saying nothing exists out there. I'm just saying that the way we picture, you know, if you've ever been in a courtroom and listened to six different people testify about an accident, you wonder if any two of them were at the same accident. How did that happen? Certainly they all were right on the same corner, weren't they? Yes, they were on the same corner, but no two of them experienced the same reality. Each mind has a unique output, and in each moment, each mind is experiencing its own realities. And remember, those realities always tell you more about the content of your mind than the world you think you're looking at. Reality versus actuality. So we've got about 18 minutes left, lots of time for conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our calling number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show directly. And then while you're listening, if you push 1, that'll raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know you want to talk with us. You know, it's interesting how often that blame game that people play extends to others and beyond others, even to the Creator. You know, we're given a warning signal, pain. Pain has a very powerful purpose. It's to make our ears grow, to get to start to listen to the truth. And what you hide from yourself in your life is your disease. And pain creates disease. Disease says, hey, you've got something going on in here. Pain says, come and look. Listen. Grow your ears so you can tap into what's happening here and change it. So we don't live in a physical world. We live in an energetic world. We listen to Einstein. This is one of the foundations of this work. Einstein says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. Matter doesn't exist. So pain is nothing but an alarm. It tells us what's going on inside of us. If there's something we really need to be paying attention to. The idea of this work is to heal, not to sweep symptoms away. You know, treatment, what the world calls healing is really treatment. And treatment is about, I can get rid of your symptoms so you can pretend you're better. I can give you a pill so that you won't have to experience that anymore. But the that that you're experiencing is something you've created. And until you're willing to remove it, you're going to need another pill and another pill and another pill. So we're not interested in sweeping symptoms away. Now, that doesn't mean don't ever take a pill. You know, for pain management, if you've listened to the pain and you've gotten the message, there's work for you to do and you're willing to continue the work. That doesn't mean if you've got a really bad headache, you know, take an aspirin. So what? But if you use the aspirin to pretend that now your pain is handled, and you don't engage in healing, you're in big trouble, because every treatment module, every modality of treatment that there is creates diseases. Just look at the insert package on your treatment plan. Look at the warning signal, the things they have to warn you about, the body parts that are going to fall off or break. So we're not interested in sweeping symptoms away. We're interested in becoming conscious of energies that are out of harmony with the love that we are and remove those energies. restore ourselves to full function by removing the blocks to the awareness of the highest and best that we're capable of. That means you engage in things that vitalize you, and you drop away the things that don't. So when you're vital, you know, if you're at full 100% energy level, there's nothing you can hide from yourself. This work is about being at 100% vitality. And if you look at much of the food of the culture, it's about taking you out of 100% vitality. There's an interesting video documentary that you've heard me talk about before. And you can usually buy it on Amazon or eBay for a few bucks. They're used copies around. The documentary is called May I Be Frank. And it's a story about a man who visits a restaurant in California. True story. And this is a fellow who's a kind of a tough, street smart Italian kid. But now he's in his 60s and he's kind of grossly overweight. And he arrives at this restaurant called Cafe Gratitude. And Cafe Gratitude's kind of an interesting place. The food is awesome. And one of the things they do is when you come into the restaurant, they greet you with a question. It's the question of the day. So on the particular day, this fellow named Frank comes into the restaurant. The question of the day is, what do you want in your life? Frank kind of gets emotional, responds to the two kids who are asking, the waiters. He says, I'd like to be loved again, but with this ugly body that's 100 pounds overweight, I know I never will be. And, you know, he's on the verge of tears. And the two young men, the servers who are talking to him, go back and speak to the owner of the restaurant, who's the father of one of the boys. And the two boys decide that they're going to take this fellow on as a project and assist him. And when they do that, they decide they're going to make a documentary out of it. May I Be Frank? It's great. I mean, it's a really powerful view of, one, how food impacts the vitality level of whether we heal or stand in disease. But there's a particularly interesting scene where, you know, this guy, as a younger man, fell in love with a woman. They had a wonderful relationship. He had a daughter. And then, you know, the normal crap of the culture and having no tools, they divorce and separate and live in anger with each other. But he wants to patch it up. He wants to clean it up with her. So they actually, they're estranged, but they work it out. They're at bring her to his apartment. She's on the other side of the country. They bring her out to California to meet with him. And they're going to, you know, moderate the conversation between them and facilitate some healing. It all starts, you know, nice and cordial. But then when they start to get into some of the hot issues, this guy, you know, fiery Italian New York street kid or New Jersey street kid, goes into a fit of rage at his former wife. And it's just so beautifully spontaneous. One of the scenes earlier in the documentary is they go to Frank's apartment. Frank makes an agreement with them that they will only eat what they feed him. He will eat nothing else. You know, if they're going to put this time into him, he's going to have to make some commitments. So he's okay. That's what he does. So they actually go to his apartment. They show in one of the earlier scenes, these two young men go to the apartment with him, and they clean out all the drugs in his house. And his drugs are the processed foods and the sugared foods and the meat and on and on. I mean, they literally throw out bags and bags and bags of stuff, empty the freezer, empty the fridge, empty the cupboards. So that's an earlier scene in the film. But then when he's processing, you know, they're processing with him and his wife, he just flies into a fit of rage. And as he does, he gets up off the couch just it's just as spontaneous as you can imagine it. He gets up off the couch and, you know, almost runs into the kitchen and opens the fridge looking for his drugs. But he has to close the fridge immediately because he's got no drugs in there anymore. He's got no garbage food to eat. You know, at this stage, probably 60 to 70% of the food in this culture is nothing but drug garbage. So if you want to be vital, you got to pay attention to what you do on every level, what you think, what you eat, everything. So this work is about being at 100% vitality so that you can no longer hide things from yourself. You know, if you're at full function, you can't suppress, you can't hide things. So to heal, we need to step up to the willingness to look at everything that's within us, including our own genetic patterns, and learn to remove them. That's what this work is about. And so, does that leave anybody? We've got about 10 minutes or 8 minutes for question or two. Just another little packet of information there. How can we support you? What's on your mind? The call-in number, again, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. Dial that number, and we'll be having a conversation if you push one.
We have a hand.
Awesome. Let's say hello.
Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hey, hello, guys.
Welcome,
well, Michael, this is to just about everything, and I feel personally justifiably bowled out for not having done a worksheet on the stressful situation with Jacob Boone. On the other hand, I'm not here to talk about that, but to ask for a quick piece of advice. And that is, Jacob just texted me and says, my apartment's a total wreck. It's one tiny room. And I leave tomorrow by 9:45 in the morning, and I don't know how I'm going to clean it up. Now, he lives in a complete state of physical chaos, and he always has. And
right.
With ADHD, I've heard that that's a real thing, and that he's just crawling the walls. Do you know anything about that?
Well, you know, I talked the other day about Einstein, and I shared with you that this journey that we made, the trip we made up to Boston and spent time with this scientist who has this new treatment modality working with probiotics. I mean, we went up to his house. So this guy's 75, and he's created something that's just like monumental in the healing field. And he lives on a little old cottage. You know, this is up in Boston, or just outside of Boston, up on the Chesapeake Bay. So he lives on an island in a cottage that probably was built 60 years ago. And he's got like clothes and things like that. They're stored in Rubbermaid garbage cans in front of and down the side of his house. He's got about 30 Rubbermaid garbage cans, you know, the big, whatever, 50-gallon ones with a lid on them that stick and they're weatherproof. That's where his stuff is stored. And he actually, when we asked to use the restroom, you know, he needed to pee, said, please go out and use the yard. He wouldn't let anybody in the house, I imagine, because that's the kind of space he lives in. So in that case, and I understand Einstein was very much like that, he just wasn't connected to anything other than what he was bringing into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that may be a form of ADHD, or it may be a form of, you know, differently enabled in the mind, but
yeah.
I hear it. So I take it that his request is for you to take responsibility for cleaning up his, for getting his apartment cleaned up.
Well, this is the cool thing, is I'm much too far away. So he's he knows he's going to have to do it. He knows I'm not going to do it. But I did say, do you have a pal who would help you? Because it's not a big deal. He has a duffel bag and a suitcase. I mean, you can throw the stuff in there in 10 minutes.
Yep.
So it's a thing, though, and it's way past,
here's,
no judging him.
Well, remember I've
like
talked about, well, remember I've talked about the sympathetic, parasympathetic. Did I send you the video that I did for the practitioner's call on Avacyn, on sympathetic, parasympathetic, and how the Avacyn impacts it?
I think you did, and I didn't listen.
Okay, well, you might want to give it a listen. But, you know, when and with the type of fear that's gone on in Jacob's life, I guarantee he lives in sympathetic dominance 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
One, you know, sympathetic dominance means fight, fright, fear, or freeze. Literally, the energy and the blood supply to the higher, the parts of the brain that contain higher function are cut off in that freeze state. I mean, literally, people become physically paralyzed when they're in that sympathetic dominant state. So that would be one of the things I'd suggest when he gets home is you get his hand in that machine and keep him in it as much as you can and see what happens, because what it does is it opens the blood flow to the parasympathetic state where you get rest, digestion, and thriving rather than the fear, fight, fright, and freeze mode. But it sounds like probably he spends quite a bit of time in paralysis.
And it's so weird, Michael. He went for his evaluations at this program fearing that he would get terrible reviews. They gave him fantastic reviews. They said, you're one of the most gifted singers we've had here in a long time. You take instruction beautifully. You're truly an actor. You've got to go into the theater. This is your calling. Onward and upward. And he was thrilled, but he had no idea.
Yeah.
And then today he calls and says, oh, I sang my a song today in class, and it wasn't very good. He beats up on himself.
Well,
you
that's his power person dynamic. When his power person isn't around to beat up on him. And, you know, this is, I mean, everything you're saying is pointing out the urgency of him needing to learn and apply forgiveness, but he's going to have to do that.
I know.
You know, there's almost no one in the world that doesn't need to be handed these tools, and almost everyone in the world resists. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to deal with that. But they don't know they're under the spell of it 24/7, 365. There's where I'm suggesting that as soon as he gets home, get his hand in the Avacyn, and if you can give him some experience of being in that parasympathetic state, literally the chronically in sympathetic dominance, the blood flow is cut off to everything that doesn't have to do with survival. You know, so if you're in a jungle and a lion's chasing you, you don't need to urinate. So guess what? That function is shut down in sympathetic dominance. You don't need to defecate. That function is shut down. You don't need to produce red blood cells. That function is shut down. You don't need to, all sorts of things you don't need. And those functions are shut off. Blood flow, energy show is shut off. Flow is shut off. And to go back into a balance where the sympathetic dominance or sympathetic balance to parasympathetic occurs, then blood flow is opened. And to give him a taste of that and those higher functions going is probably one of the most important things you could do for him at this stage, aside from finding a way to inspire him to engage in forgiveness. And, you know, he doesn't have to believe a word about forgiveness to engage in it, and it'll change him.
Yeah, okay. He just texted me and said, I wish you guys were here. Lots of parents and family are coming. Guilt trip number one. Maybe you could help me with my apartment. I honestly don't see any way I'll get it done tonight unless I stay up all night. So I think what I'm going to do is just call him. I have an appointment in 2 seconds, but I think I'm just going to call him and say, I'll talk you through it. You'll do it. And I'll be on the other end of the phone, and we'll do it piece by piece, and it won't be bad at all. And I hope he'll accept that.
Holding a space. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holding a space for it. I appreciate, Orb, how much you cherish this young man and what you're willing to do for him. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, I'm not willing to.
Every young man and every young woman in trauma needs that kind of support. Yeah.
Oh, they do, and there's so many.
Oh, it's horrendous. All right, blessings. Everybody, thank you for joining us.
Great.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye.